night was come, as we were driven up and down in Asia, about midnight, the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country, and sounded and found it 20 fathoms. When they had gone a little further, they sounded again and found it 15 fathoms. Then, fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast out 4 anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into the sea under collar, as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. While the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, "This is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health, for there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you." And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all, and when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat, and we were in the ship 216 souls. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. And when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore, into the which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust in the ship. And when they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves unto the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoist up the mainsail to the wind and made toward shore. And falling into a place where 2 seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable, but the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land. And the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. So the second episode of this voyage began in what is known as the Fair Havens there on the island of Crete. And they had decided to sail to Phoenicia, which is a port city with a harbor that was about 40 miles west, and it was on the western end of the island of Crete. And they began that voyage under favorable conditions. They had a gentle south wind that was blowing and encouraged them in their choice. But it was not long before a terrible storm came up and the winds blew them off course. That storm, in fact, continued, and the situation continued to get worse to the point that the whole ship lost all hope of survival. And so Paul intervened yet again. This time he had a prophetic word from heaven given to him by an angel. Then, finding out that it was God's will for him to stand trial before Caesar in Rome. And Paul was confident that this word would be fulfilled exactly as the angel had spoken it, that no lives would be lost. However, he did say that the ship itself would be lost. They would be cast upon an island. Now, the third cycle, the final of this account that we're looking at, begins after they had been at sea for 14 days. The storm continued. The ship had been driven near to some land, which again increases their complications. And other than a momentary lapse, the ship is following Paul's leadership by this time, which is quite remarkable given the fact that he was on board as a prisoner, being sent with other prisoners, presumably condemned to death, to Rome. Now, this intervention succeeds in encouraging them, and the sailors do all that they can to respond to the circumstances that they're faced with and to get the ship to land. And in the end, Paul's words given him by the angel prove to be true. So we have 3 parts to this final, verses 27 to 32, where we see the ship is drifting, and in verses 33 to 38, where Paul intervenes once again. Verses 39 to 44 is the shipwreck. So let's begin looking at this, beginning in verse 27, where the ship is drifting. It says, "But when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, about midnight, the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country." Now, the 14th night refers to the continuing storm. And that started after that they had left the Fair Haven. So the ship was driven in the sea there between Sicily and the island of Crete. And from the next chapter, we know that they were drawing near to the island of Malta, Though at this time, as you will recall, they had no idea where they were exactly, because the sun and the stars had not appeared for many days. They weren't able to calculate their position. They didn't know exactly where they were located and how close the land was. But them being driven close to Malta means that they had been adrift at sea. They had been driven by the storm, the waves and the wind, and they had covered somewhere around 475 nautical miles in this 2 weeks of storm. In the dark of the midnight, Luke mentions that it was about midnight, some of the shipmen, now this would mean those of the crew of the ship, some of the shipmen, they sensed that they were getting close to the land. And likely it was the sound of the waves, perhaps upon some rocks or something. But he says in verse 28, "And sounded and found it 20 fathoms. And when he had gone a little further, they sounded again and found it 15 fathoms. So the sailors dropped a rope with a weight attached to the bottom of it. And this they would use to measure the depth of the water. So the first reading was 20 fathoms, and that would have been about 120 feet. A fathom is around 6 feet, so it was about 120 feet. The second reading was 15 fathoms, which means it was now about 90 feet. So they were quickly in water that was becoming shallow, more shallow, and it confirmed that they were, in fact, getting close to land, which prompted them to take emergency measures. Beginning in verse number 29, it says, "Then fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stern and wished for the day." So they became afraid now. It's at midnight and it is dark, and they're afraid of being driven upon the rocks with hours of darkness still yet to go. So they drop four anchors from the ship in order to try to slow the ship's progress toward the land that they were hearing. Verse 30 says, "And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into the sea, under collar as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship." So some of the sailors, some of the crew, had tried at this point to abandon the ship, which seems to be a pretty desperate measure, given the condition that they were in, under the cover of darkness. They're drawing near to some land. Perhaps they're hearing the waves on the rocks, and they don't know exactly where it is. But they were about to abandon the ship. They let down a lifeboat, and Luke notes that they did this under the collar or under the pretense of putting out some more anchors. They would be laying out anchors from below, from the front part of the ship. It appears that they were just so desperate that they preferred the risk in this smaller boat at night than what seemed the certainty of this ship being run into the rocks. In verse number 31, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved." Paul spoke to the centurion. This is a milder intervention here. But he warns that they will not survive unless they all remain in the ship. And of course, Paul has already told them that the ship is going to be lost, but that all of those that remain in the ship will be saved. In other words, their lives will be spared. They will survive. But when there were some of the crew that was going to abandon the ship, Paul warns the centurion about this. This was the condition for all who would be saved from this shipwreck. They had to abide within the ship. In verse 32, "Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off." Now, by this point in the account, once again, Paul has proven reliable. The centurion and the soldiers, they heed his warning and they cut the boat loose, so no one will leave the ship that way. Now, they were probably eager to also to keep the ship's crew on board to deal with the ship, because obviously once it gets light, they're going to have to take measures to try to maneuver as much as possible to bring this ship to land. Now, Paul didn't tell them to cut this boat loose, but that was the action of the soldiers. And certainly no one, again, is going to get off the ship that way. Then we come to beginning in verse 33, and we see this, where Paul intervenes once again. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, This day is the 14th day that you have tarried and continue fasting, having taken nothing. So he had a smaller intervention earlier with the boat, and now he addresses the ship again. They had gone 14 days without food. Now Luke notes that it was just before dawn, and he's emphasizing here that Paul spoke to all that are on board. Now we're able to look at that and to look at his warning to the centurion about the boat and realize that Paul has obviously been given a great amount of liberty on this ship. He obviously is above deck and he knows what is going on and is able to speak. Perhaps he's chained to a soldier. I don't know what all the situation may have been, but he's obviously given a lot of liberty in this circumstance. And by this time, we see that for the most part, he's won the following of those that are on the ship. So it was about just before dawn, and Paul addresses all of the ship. Notice in verse 34, Wherefore I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health, for there shall not a hair fall from the head of any of you. Paul urges them to eat some food. And you notice there he says that it would be for their health. Now the word in the Greek that is there and here is translated health is the same word that is most often translated in the New Testament as salvation. This will be for your salvation. Now the word for salvation, it can refer to a physical salvation in terms of the saving of one's life. It can also refer to a spiritual salvation in terms of the saving of the soul. Here it is obviously a reference to the physical salvation of their life. And he says, take this food. In other words, it will be for your rescuing. It will be for your saving. It will be for the sparing of your life. Paul had wanted them to eat, to be strengthened, and to be encouraged. And you notice that he adds at the end a word that is a figure of speech. There shall not a hair fall from the head of any of you. This is a figure of speech. It's common throughout the Bible in the Old Testament as well as the New. And it is an expression that indicates a complete protection. It's not intended to indicate literally that they wouldn't lose a single hair throughout all of this process. But it's indicating a complete protection. So in other words, they're going to survive. But they're not going to just barely survive. They're going to survive and they're going to be unharmed. They're going to come out of this relatively unscathed and they will be alive on the land. Verse 35. And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Now, Luke gives Paul's actions here in a typical expression of eating by Christians, anywhere that we find it described. He took bread, which means he would have taken a loaf of bread. He gave thanks to God. He broke it into smaller pieces and then began to eat. Now, if you notice this verse, you notice where the emphasis falls. It says that he had thus spoken, he took bread. And then notice this phrase, and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And then you have two smaller phrases, and when he had broken it, he began to eat. The emphasis in this verse is obviously on the thanks that Paul gave to God. In other words, in the presence of them all, in the presence of all of those on the ship, he prayed openly and he prayed aloud, giving thanks to God for this food. And the implication being that all of those on board the ship heard what Paul had prayed. Now, when we think about this, the ship is about to be broken into pieces. And Paul is obviously on the ship that's being tossed by the waves. The anchors presumably have helped to slow its progress down a little. It's been beaten by the wind and the waves. And Paul is calmly taking bread, thanking God for the provision of food. And then he breaks it and eats. And he does this obviously as an example and as an encouragement, as well as an expression of thanksgiving. One of the thoughts that came to me as I was just trying to imagine that scene in my mind is that here's Paul, a prisoner, presumably probably chained, though perhaps a light chaining. Soldiers that are guarding him. He's been given a lot of liberty, but still yet he is a prisoner. He's on a boat that he knows is going to be wrecked, but he also knows he's going to survive. And he's calmly thanking God. And one of the things I've just thought about, just even beginning to think on my own life, that even in the midst of some of the worst of trials and circumstances that I have endured, is that there truly is always something to be thankful for. There's always something to thank God for. There's always some provision that God has made. There's always some mercy that we have experienced from His hands. And I know that humanly speaking, it's easy for us to become discouraged and to become despondent. And how oftentimes have we wished that, maybe our problems were just different. You know, I would just like to have a different set of problems for a while than the ones that I have to continue dealing with. But the truth is that God's mercy is always evident and it's always around us if we have eyes to see and ears to hear. And there's always something to be thankful for. And not only that, but our being thankful, even in the midst of trying circumstances, is also a way of ministering a blessing of encouragement to others. I don't know how many times that you have experienced it. I've experienced it of times being down, being discouraged, maybe even getting despondent, maybe even getting desperate. And God has used someone to encourage me. Their thankfulness, their gratefulness, the fact that they haven't lost heart has helped me in such an instance. That's exactly what we see taking place on board this ship. Obviously, Paul wants everyone on board to know that God is responsible for saving them. God will save them. God has provided us even this small measure of mercy and grace, which is a little bit of food that we can eat before this ship is wrecked, to regain our strength to be able to swim to shore. There's always something to be thankful for. Verse 36. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. Paul's words and actions had a good effect on them. They were encouraged, and they also began to eat. And I can also say from experience as well, as we have family members or people in the community or people that we work with, people who are not believers, and they see us in the midst of these trials, that it is a great testimony to them when they see us still yet being thankful to God. It's a good testimony, and it's a good witness, and it has a good effect. And that's what happened on board this ship. Remember, they have been through it. They have lost hope of survival. They've not eaten for 14 days. All they've got is the word of this prisoner on board the ship that they're going to be saved. And though, as we see the account going on, they seem to begin to hold on to Paul's words more, although they are quick to turn on him after that they are wrecked on the island, which we will look at in another message. But nevertheless, his thanksgiving to God is an encouragement. It says that they took heart. They were of good cheer and they ate. Verse 37, and we were in all in the ship 216 souls. So Luke giving the number on board the ship at this point might seem odd, but they probably at this point took a count. Most likely they were eating, so that would be one reason to have a count. But also they would take a count so that they could account for all who were on board. They know that the ship, there's no escaping this. They're going to be wrecked. Their hope at this point is to try to land the ship on land with the least amount of damage possible. So obviously they took an accounting here. The 276 would include Paul and his companions, as well as the centurion, the soldiers, the prisoners, the captain, the crew, and then whatever other passengers may have been on board of this ship for whatever reason. Verse 38. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. So we're told here that all had enough to eat. And then it was time for their final preparations. And they threw the wheat into the sea, the last and most precious cargo. You see, this was a grain ship. This was their cargo that they were hauling from Alexandria to Italy. This is what they were going to be paid for. This is what they were even risking such a voyage for, was to be able to deliver this wheat safely to Italy and to receive payment. And now they throw it into the sea. It's all a loss. This being the last and most precious cargo. Their effort is to lighten the ship as much as possible. They want to ride as high as they can as they are approaching the land so that they will avoid the shoals that are there, and they hope to land the ship on the beach. Then we come to verse 39. This is begins the last part of this chapter that we're looking at, the shipwreck. Verse 39. And when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore, into the which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust in the ship. So full daylight now certainly helped them, but they didn't recognize the land that they could see. Obviously, there was no harbor that they could see. There was no settlements or anything to give them any idea of where they were. So they did not know what the island was that they were looking at. But apparently they could see what is described here as something of a bay with a beach that they could see. And notice how that Luke puts their actions and their plans in terms of hopes and wishes. He says that they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust the ship into this shore, this beach that they saw. In other words, they want to run the ship up on the beach, but it must have appeared to be very difficult to do. They have very little ability to control and steer this ship. And so they're going to hope, by what means they have remaining to them, to be able to land it on this beach and to avoid the rocks or running aground on some of the shoals out from the shore. Verse 40. And when they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves under the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoisted up the mainsail to the wind and made toward the shore. They took action to carry out their plan. So they cut the anchors loose. They lowered the side rudders or the steering oars into the sea to try to steer the ship. And then they hoist up the foresail in order to catch the wind and with the rudders, hoping to steer the ship to the beach that they had seen. Verse 41, and falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable. But the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. The storm, the wind, the waves are still pushing the ship westward. And they run aground before being able to reach the beach. Obviously, this is what they were trying to avoid. But when they did, the bow of the ship became stuck in what seems to be described as some sort of a jut out of land, possibly some rocks that are offshore. And Luke notes here the violence of the waves, and the tense of the words that he used indicates that they just continued to beat on this ship, and they broke apart the stern of the ship. Now, it doesn't seem that it was immediately broken apart, but that this happened over a little bit of time as the waves continued to beat and to break up the ship. Verse 42. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. This last desperate act was suggested when the soldiers wanted to kill the prisoners. Now, it seems unthinkable given their circumstances, but the soldiers were concerned that in the swimming ashore, the prisoners might escape. So they want to kill them first. I think that this certainly confirms to us the responsibility that the soldiers bore for the prisoners that they guarded should they escape. Verse 43. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land. So the centurion prevents the soldiers from killing the prisoners, and Luke notes that this was done primarily to save Paul. So Paul does not intervene here, but the centurion does on his behalf. So all who could swim were to jump into the sea and swim to the land. Verse 44, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. So the others jumped into the sea. They grabbed onto whatever they could to stay afloat. Now remember, the storm is still going. So the sea is still violent. I mean, it's breaking up the ship. The sea is still violent. The wind is still blowing. So what I'm saying is that this swim to get from the ship to the shore is by no means easy and safe and certain. There certainly are still very much in danger as they are doing this, as they're off the ship now. Ultimately, though, even though every step along the way, Luke has emphasized danger after danger after danger that they were in, all on board the ship made it safely to land. So as we think about this entire account that we've been looking at in this chapter, this voyage toward Rome that ends ultimately on the island of Malta before they're able to continue to Rome, this entire account brings together human action and God's will in an interesting intersection. First of all, we have running throughout this account the weather events. Now, Luke makes plain that it is late in the year, and that even it is even past time when ships should be sailing on the sea. So what I'm saying is there's nothing in this account that makes this storm unusual. It was a very fierce storm, to be sure, but it wasn't really an unusual or an unexpected storm. It was not some sort of a record-breaking, record-setting type of storm event. Now, if you think about the storm, for instance, in the book of Jonah, when you read that account, it's obvious that that is a very special storm. That is a very unusual storm that God sent directly to that ship because of Jonah. Now, that's made clear in the account. That's not the case here. That's not the case. This storm is exactly what would be expected in their location at that time of year. It is the reason why ships did not sail at that time of year in that part of the sea. So all of this account gives us these weather events, and while they are certainly dangerous and life-threatening, there's nothing unusual about them. It's what should be expected. Then we have running throughout this account various human actions. We have different men here with different motives, who are all brought together by the fact that they're trying to get to Rome. They have different reasons for wanting to get there, but they are working together, in essence, to get to Rome. Now, certainly, probably the other prisoners beside Paul were probably in no hurry to get to Rome, because most likely, again, they were due for execution when they got there. But we see in this account that men make choices, and they react to situations in a fairly normal manner. In other words, there's nothing really remarkable about what any of those on board the ship do during this whole process. Given their experience, given the information that they had on hand, their choices are not irrational. In fact, if you think about it, the most remarkable actions and words come from Paul himself. given the fact of what he knows that has been revealed to him, and his calm thankfulness and confidence in God throughout it all is very remarkable. But they did not trust Paul's words in the main, though over time they did hold him to be more reliable. And then thirdly, we have in this account God's will that is made plain. Now, as you read through this whole account, it's a long account. We've got 44 verses in this chapter given to this whole voyage. And really, when you think about it, any sort of direct action or intervention by God is almost entirely absent. It's not entirely absent, but it's certainly not emphasized. It is there. Only the statement given by Paul that came from the angel reveals God's will in this episode. Paul, as Christ's appointed witness and apostle, will get to Rome and preach the gospel there. That is God's will. So despite all of the circumstances and all of the situations, God's will be done. So when we think about lessons that we take from this account, I would say that no one prefers the prospect of enduring a shipwreck. No one wants that. Although we would rather survive a shipwreck, I'm sure, than not survive one. But regardless of our personal circumstances, regardless of the conditions of the country or the world around us, and regardless of who sits in the White House, understand this, that God's will be accomplished. It will be done. So again, though we have this long account, and really a lot of it just seems very unremarkable, but yet we do have mentions here and there that let us know that these certain events are happening, and they're happening according to God's will, that His will be accomplished. Paul will go to Rome. He will stand before Caesar. He will preach the gospel in Rome. God has a purpose, in other words. God has a purpose that He is working out through all of these decisions, and no telling how many times the captain, the owner of the ship and the crew, and maybe with the centurion or some of the soldiers, no telling how many times that they met together and they talked over their options and they discussed and they made plans. I mean, we know of a number of times that it happened, but no doubt it happened probably daily, probably many times a day. They might begin to discuss as each new thing would happen and come about, and they would make all of these plans, and all these things are in motion. And here stands Paul, a chained prisoner. He has no choices. He's not really directing, though he is giving it advice. He's giving counsel, and ultimately they come to trust him more. But God has a purpose that He is working out. And all the plans and actions of men, and all the events of weather, and the storm, and the wind, and the waves, and the wrecking of a ship, and none of those things can stop God's will from being accomplished. So I believe one of the lessons we take is certainly that of an encouragement and an exhortation that we must keep pressing on in the work of the Lord. It is just as Isaiah wrote in Isaiah chapter 55, verse 8, says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord." And then in verse 11, he says, "So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it." We can't wait for and always expect to have favorable conditions. We have to keep going forward in the confidence that God's will be accomplished. Do we know everything that God is doing and how that God is going to take all of these seemingly random pieces and put them together? No, we do not. But we do have assurance that is exactly what He's doing. And we have instances like this account from Scripture where God is doing just that. Now, I will say this, that was probably a pretty uncomfortable voyage. I don't think that Paul was sitting back in ease and comfort and luxury and saying, you know, what a great thing it is to serve Jesus. Now, Paul really was dealing with uncomfortable situations, inconvenience. He really was dealing with suffering. And he gets to spend a fourth day in the ocean, a fourth shipwreck, at least that we know of, and making it to shore. All the while being confident that God's will be carried out. And it's oftentimes one thing to know that in our minds, maybe even to say that. But then in the midst of that great difficulty, when we are truly afraid, do we have that confidence that God's will be accomplished and that it's always right to do the right thing that God has told us to do, to perform His work?